Pakistan's Hazara community refuses to bury coal miners killed by terrorists, demanding the killers be brought to justice. Iran's nuclear chief says the country is capable of producing up to 9 kilos of 20% enriched uranium within a month. Germany registered 944 more coronavirus deaths and 12,000 new infections in one day. Greetings in the world. Welcome to World News. Good to have you with us. Now, starting with developments in Pakistan, members of the Shi'i Hazara community in the Balochistan province say that they will continue with their rallies until the killers of coal miners are brought to justice. Protesters have blockaded a highway in the provincial capital of Quetta with the coffins of slain miners. They say they won't withdraw until Prime Minister Imran Khan meets them. Hazara families and protesters are also refusing to bury the victims until their demands, including the resignation of the provincial government, are met. Some protests are also held in the southern port city of Karachi in solidarity with the Hazara community. On Sunday, Daesh terrorists slit the throats of 11 miners in a residential compound near a coal mine. Hundreds of Hazaras have been killed over the past decade in gun and bomb attacks in Pakistan. Political analyst Mohammad Narandi says Iran is reminding the United States and European signatories to the nuclear deal that it will no longer tolerate their behavior as regards the agreement.
It's a reminder to the United States and the Europeans that Iran will no longer tolerate their behavior with regards to the JCPOA or the nuclear deal. The Europeans and Americans have violated all of their commitments in accordance with the nuclear deal. Of course, under Obama, the United States violated the deal, and under Trump, the United States tore the deal apart altogether. But the Europeans, during this period when Trump exited the agreement under pressure from Trump, they violated all of their commitments. And the Iranians, as you know, waited for a full year. They continued to abide by all of their commitments while the Europeans and the Americans did not. And then after waiting a full year, in five phases, the Iranians reduced their commitments. And even after those five phases, Iran continued to abide by a large segment of their commitments, including monitoring and certain other issues such as enrichment beyond a certain point. But now the Iranians have said enough is enough.
The Iranian army has launched a large-scale drill involving different types of domestically produced drones. The area of the exercises stretches all the way from the northeastern Semnan province to eastern borders. The ground force, the air defense force, the navy and the air force are taking part. During the two-day drill, the Iranian army is flying hundreds of drones for combat, reconnaissance, and suicide missions, as well as electronic warfare. New unmanned aerial vehicles and related systems are also unveiled and put to test. The chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff saying that such drills indicate Iran's military combat readiness.
The drone drills of the Islamic Republic of Iran's army, as well as the exercises conducted recently in the Persian Gulf and maneuvers planned for the coming days, all indicate that the Iranian armed forces are fully ready to counter any threats posed against the country's security.
Major General Bagheri says that Iran does not intend to invade its neighbors. He, however, warned that fingers are on triggers to respond to any possible enemy action. Stay tuned. Time now for the news review section. Iran's nuclear chief says that his country is capable of producing up to 9 kilos of 20% enriched uranium within a month.
In technical terms, we managed to launch the 20% enrichment in 24 hours. We can produce 17 to 20 grams of the 20% enriched uranium in an hour. This level of production has now been achieved. It means a production capacity of 8 to 9 kilograms a month, so that we can produce the 120 kilogram required by the law.
Aliyeva Salehi made the announcement a day after Iran produced the first batch of 20% enriched uranium at Fordo facility. Salehi said that the move is in line with legislation Parliament recently passed in response to U.S. sanctions. He said other requirements of the law, including the installation of more advanced centrifuges, will also be fulfilled. Tehran says the decision to resume 20% enrichment is a remedial action following non-compliance by other signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal. Iran says it will reverse the steps after they meet their commitments. Time now to discuss this and get some insight. So joining me will be Rodney Shakespeare, co-founder of the Global Justice Movement in London, and Elijah McNear, journalist and political analyst in Brussels. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Let's go to London. Professor Shakespeare, I just told you about what Iran is intending to do, and of course, you know, there has been this ultimatum, two-month ultimatum by the Iranian parliament and the ratification there. So what's best now for the other side of the JCPOA to do?
It's very, very simple. As a result of the sanctions and of the failure to trade in a normal way, in the first place, hundreds, if not thousands, of Iranians would have been ill or even died. I would remind you that 500,000 Iraqi children died as a result of sanctions in the 1990s. Secondly, billions of dollars of economic damage has been done by the failure, by the sanctions and the failure to trade normally. So the answer to your question is simple. All that has to happen is that the compensation is paid for those deaths, the compensation is paid for the economic damage, and then you do a few other things like paying back money which you owe UK or South Korea. And when you've done that, you ask whether Iran wishes to talk. But you don't attempt to impose any sanctions when you, America and Europe, you are the monsters that broke this agreement. You are the ones that have inflicted massive damage. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. And perhaps you might like to start, before you even pay compensation, by making an apology.
Okay. Now turning to Brussels, Elijah, watching the different developments surrounding the JCPOA or the Iran nuclear deal. You know, as per the deal, Iran has started scaling back. At the same time, it has stressed time and again that this is reversible. So, and that means, provided the European the side of the deal, they go back and act within the deal and make good on their promises, Iran can fully go back to the full compliance. So what do you predict will happen?
I think what Iran is doing is a series of pressure on the new U.S. administration led by President-elect Joe Biden, and it is sending a real hit on the head of President Donald Trump by when the Iranian parliament issue a law decreeing that there has to be an increase to 20% of purity exactly at the Fordo nuclear facility. That is a direct hit to Donald Trump to say your sanctions and your maximum pressure, you can stuff it and it's not working. And also to the European saying, if you are afraid of Iran reaching the level required for a nuclear bomb, although Iran is saying that my program is not a military program, then you just need to abide by the deal that was signed, the GCPOA, that is known as a nuclear deal, in 2016 with President Obama and the five members of the five permanent members of the UN plus Germany. So Iran waited since 2018 until now to take slowly steps that go by incrementing pressure on the, particularly the European community, because it is very clear that Trump and Netanyahu, and here I say the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, because he is the conciliary, he is the advisor of Donald Trump on anything that is related to Iran and how to hit Iran and the allies. So Iran is saying to Netanyahu and to President Trump, we already know your stand, you're leaving in 2 weeks' time, all your pressure was useless, you came up with nothing, you're still waiting by phone, we're not going to call you, and now we continue our nuclear program. We go back to where we were in 2015, and we are going to increase to reach a purity of 500 kilograms as dictated by the parliament and forced on the government.
Right. Now, Professor Shakespeare, how do you see the future unfolding regarding the JCPOA? Europeans are still giving it lip service and stressing that we must maintain it in any way. But the funny thing is, it's their side of the story. I mean, they are the ones to take action. Iran has been transparent, even the scale back and everything else. And even this enrichment, 20% enrichment, Iran has notified the IAEA about this.
Iran has been completely transparent, completely honorable. But the problem is, as your other guest has indicated, the problem is American policy is controlled by Zionism. It's controlled also by its desire to suppress all democratic movements. That's to say, it supports and is in cahoots with Saudi Arabia. America supports genocide in Yemen and what is a form of creeping genocide in Palestine. The whole thing is sickening. It is time that the Europeans showed a bit of guts and remembered that the European economy is now as big as the American economy. All this American is in control of everything. No, the Europeans should stand up, show some guts, and if necessary, to cooperate with others in this world against this monstrosity, which is American policy. I would just remind you of one thing, it's all you need to know. Look at the way Trump walks, like a swaggering mafia murderer, and the same with Pompeo. And let nobody think that American policy is going to change under Biden. Biden is as much a Zionist as Trump and Pompeo.
Yeah, I'm going to put the same question to Elijah. Elijah, what's Biden going to do? Expect him to do anything? Or is this the JCPOA flogging a dead horse? Some analysts discuss that way.
Personally, I think Biden is going to move fast because Iran is telling Biden that we have waited until you come to power without reacting to the aggressivity of Donald Trump. And if you're not going to move fast, the parliament already agreed a series of steps that is going to implement. Is not going to be limited to 120 kilogram with 20% purity at Fordo nuclear facility every year, but is going to move also to increase the activity of uranium enriched to move to different centrifuge machine at Natanz and go further. Therefore, Biden needs to address this issue, even if he has other priorities like China, Russia, like restoring the relationship with the allies, particularly in Europe. But I think the nuclear dossier, as Biden promised, even if he is under pressure to benefit from the already established Trump sanctions, has no choice but to see the power of Iran, the nuclear power of Iran, increasing or move very fast and say to Iran, I go back to the 2015 agreement if you go back to where we were in 2015. But wait a minute. In 2015, President Obama did not fulfill all the agreement. He started to do that slowly although he did not clear the European bank to deal with Iran. So I don't think Iran is going to be very flexible with Biden this time, and is going to move faster than Biden.
Okay, I appreciate your comments and contribution. We had Rodney Shakespeare, co-founder of the Global Justice Movement from London, and Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst from Brussels. And that's it for this edition of the News Review. Welcome back. Let's go on with the rest of this broadcast. The Iraqi President Barham Saleh has called for fresh political efforts to rebuild Iraq as an independent and sovereign nation. He hailed the parliament's decision to demand the withdrawal of U.S. forces from his country. Saleh said that Iraq won't be safe without establishing full control over its territories and natural resources. He made those comments in an event marking the first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Iranian General Soleimani and Iraqi Commander al-Mahandis. The Iraqi president said that the two men dedicated their lives to fight terrorism. Israeli forces have shot dead a Palestinian man southwest of the occupied West Bank city of Bethlehem. The Palestinian Health Ministry has confirmed the death but did not give details about the victim. The Israeli military claims that a man was hit after he tried to carry out a stabbing attack. The regime forces regularly open fatal fire on the Palestinian, citing similar pretexts. Human rights groups have repeatedly slammed Israel for its shoot-to-kill policy, saying that a large number of Palestinians who were killed had not posed any serious threat to Israeli soldiers. The number of confirmed coronavirus infections in Germany has increased by nearly 12,000. The country is considering extending the hard lockdowns, according to Robert Koch Institute. 1.8 million cases have been detected in Germany since the beginning of the outbreak. The related deaths also rose by 944 to over 35,000. Germany has been under tight coronavirus restrictions since mid-December. It's now weighing an extension to the lockdown measures until the end of January. Now, elsewhere in Europe, on Tuesday, Russia reported more than 24,000 new cases, taking its tally to 3.3 million. Officials said that 518 people died of the disease in one day, and that pushes the death toll there to 60,000. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Alton, U.S. defense secretaries still living, including two who worked for Donald Trump, have called for the president and his supporters to accept that he lost the election and warned against attempts to involve the military in his increasingly desperate efforts to overturn the election result. Among the signatories was James Mattis, who served as Defense Secretary in the Trump administration. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Julian Borgia. The piece is titled, Leave Military Out of It, Former Defense Secretaries Tell Trump. Stay with us for more of Julian Borgia's article. All 10 former U.S. defense secretaries still living, including two who worked for Donald Trump, have called for the president and his supporters to accept that he lost the election and warned against attempts to involve the military in his increasingly desperate efforts to overturn the election results. In an unprecedented joint letter published in the Washington Post, the defense secretaries addressed the worst fears of what could happen in 17 days of Trump administration's remaining before Joe Biden's inauguration. An attempt by Donald Trump to foment a crisis with the aim of triggering a military intervention in his last-ditch struggle to hold on to power. Among the signatories to the extraordinary letter was James Mattis, who served as Defense Secretary in the Trump administration. Efforts to involve the U.S. Armed Forces in resolving election disputes would take us into dangerous, unlawful, and unconstitutional territory, the letter said. Civilian and military officials who direct or carry out such measures would be accountable, including potentially facing criminal penalties, for the grave consequences of their actions on our republic. Among the signatories were James Mattis and Mark Esper, who both served as defense secretaries in the Trump administration. Mark Esper openly contradicted Donald Trump in June by insisting there were no grounds for invoking the Insurrection Act, which allows for deployment of U.S. troops on American streets in extreme circumstances. Dick Cheney, defense secretary under George H.W. Bush and vice president to his son George W. Bush, and Donald Rumsfeld, Defense Secretary in the younger Bush administration, also signed the letter. The other signatories were William Perry and William Cohen, Defense Secretaries in the Bill Clinton administration, Leon Panetta, Chuck Hagel, and Ashton Carter, who served under Barack Obama, and Robert Gates, who served under both the younger Bush and Barack Obama. Transitions, which all of us have experienced, are a crucial part of the successful transfer of power. They often occur at times of international uncertainty about U.S. national security policy and posture, the former defense secretaries wrote in the letter. There can be a moment when the nation is vulnerable to actions by adversaries seeking to take advantage of the situation. They called on the current defense secretary, Christopher Miller, and his officials to resume cooperation with the incoming Biden transition team, who had complained their briefings had been cut off and the Pentagon had ceased answering their inquiries. The Washington Post quoted Eric Edelman, a former U.S. ambassador and defense official, as saying the genesis of the remarkable letter was a conversation that he had with Dick Cheney about how the military might be used in the coming days. There are concerns over unrest this Wednesday, 6th of January, when a dozen Republican senators say they will challenge the normally routine congressional ratification of the Electoral College result. Donald Trump has urged his supporters to rally in Washington, tweeting, "Be there, we'll be wild." The far-right Proud Boys are expected to be among the pro-Trump crowd in the Capitol. William Cohen told the Washington Post he was concerned by the mention of the possibility of martial law by the former Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, especially after Donald Trump's use of the military and other federal forces to remove protesters outside the White House last June. "It's a very dangerous course of action that needs to be called out before it happens," William Cohen said. "It is so important to see the country's secretaries of defense sending this message," wrote Risa Brooks, a Marquette University associate professor studying civil-military relations and political violence. Risa Brooks wrote, "The civilians who run the military need to be front and center in conveying this message to the public and not leave it to the military alone." Meanwhile, 12 Republican senators who have pledged not to ratify the Electoral College result this Wednesday and thereby refused to confirm Joe Biden's resounding victory over Donald Trump in the presidential election declined to defend their move on television, CNN declared on Sunday, 3rd of January. "It all recalls what Ulysses S. Grant once wrote in 1861, CNN anchor Jake Tapper said on State of the Union. Before quoting a letter, the Union General, Ulysses S. Grant, wrote at the outset of a civil war he won before becoming president himself. "There are but two parties now, traitors and patriots." "How would you describe the parties today?" Jake Tapper asked. "The attempt to overturn Trump's defeat seems doomed," a piece of political theater mounted by party grandees eager to court supporters loyal to the president before, in some cases, mounting their own runs for the White House. Nonetheless, on Saturday, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas and Ron Johnson of Wisconsin led 11 senators and senators-elect in calling for an emergency 10-day audit of results in states where the president claims electoral fraud, despite failing to provide any evidence and repeatedly losing in courts of law. The senators followed Josh Hawley of Missouri, like Ted Cruz, thought to likely to run for president in 2024, in pledging to object to the Electoral College result. A majority of House Republicans are also expected to object, after staging a Saturday call with Donald Trump to plan their own moves. Democrats control the House of Representatives, and senior Senate Republicans are opposed to the attempt to disenfranchise millions of Americans, many of them African Americans in swing states, seemingly guaranteeing the attempt will fail. Nonetheless, the current Vice President Mike Pence, who will preside over the ratification, welcomed the move by Senator Ted Cruz and others. A spokesman for Joe Biden, Michael Gwynn, said, "This stunt won't change the fact that President-elect Joe Biden will be sworn in on 20th of January, and these baseless claims have already been examined and dismissed by Trump's own Attorney General, dozens of courts of law, and election officials from both parties.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Face to face.
Millions still mourn him. From all walks of life, from Iran to Iraq, Syria to Lebanon and Palestine, Yemen to Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India, to the millions around the globe who pay great respect and tribute to the man of honor who led the region's axis of resistance to defeat Daesh. Commemorating the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, the commander of Al-Quds Brigades, we bring you a series of interviews with prominent Lebanese leaders. We are honored to be visiting today the president of the Union of Resistance of Scholars, Sheikh Maher Hamoud, who himself, at the early stages of fighting Daesh, dodged an assassination attempt near his house in the southern Lebanese city of Sidon, only because he is a staunch supporter of the resistance. Thank you for being with us, Your Eminence.
Hello, Osama.
Your Eminence, Sheikh Hamoud, on the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Deputy Director of the Popular Mobilization Units, Haj Abu Mahdi Al-Muhandis, how do you view the effectiveness of the axis of resistance in West Asia after having lost such prominent leaders?
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, praise be to God and may blessings and peace be upon Muhammad and his family, companions and followers. In fact, experience has taught us a very important matter. A martyr cultivates his place, and therefore the one who continues the march grows in his place. We accompanied a number of great martyrs who some people thought they couldn't be replaced by other individuals. But it was obvious that Almighty God had prepared the alternatives. We witnessed the moment of the assassination of Sayyid Abbas al-Musawi, Dr. Fadi al-Shakaki, and many heroes of the resistance movement in Sidon, in South Lebanon, as well as other high-ranking figures such as Haj Imad Mughniya in Syria and Sheikh Ahmed Yassin and Abdul Aziz al-Rantisi in Palestine. It is true that we are witnessing in the significance of individuals and distinctive leadership in this march, but this is not established on a particular individual, but on a foundation, thought, and the public. Thus, I didn't see in any moment we lost a great martyr, that the march had stumbled. On the contrary, the martyrdom encouraged many individuals to join the march, replacing the martyrs in one way or another. This march may experience some kind of hesitation for a short period of time, but it seems that Almighty God inserted a secret in this martyr. And the martyrs, particularly those who were assuming high positions in the resistance movement, such as General Qasem Soleimani, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, and others I mentioned earlier. Yes, it is true that any individual feels sorry for missing the distinguished martyrs and for their martyrdom, although they will reach top grades in heaven, in paradise. But at the same time, the march will acquire new elements from one side, and from another side, it will acquire new materials in order to convince others that it is honest and sincere, heading towards the ultimate goal without any hesitation. This is one aspect. The ultimate goal without any hesitation. This is one aspect. And the other aspect is that these martyrs left behind what they had gained from knowledge and experience to the generation around them. Therefore, it may be said, the martyrs passed on this experience to others. Therefore, this experience did not fade away after their death. Perhaps the verses and the Islamic history are very clear. First of these verses regarding martyrs were unveiled in the aftermath of the Battle of Uhud, when Almighty God said in the Holy Quran, "Do not consider those who were killed in the path of God dead." Till the Almighty God says, "Jubilant that neither fear nor grief shall come upon the believers left behind in the world who have not yet joined them, and that Allah wastes not the wage of the believers." Surah Al-Imran, verse 170. Then these holy verses come consecutively, confirming our march. As for those who heard the call of Allah and His Messenger after the harm befell them in the fights, for such of them as do right and ward off evil, there is great reward. Those to whom the people said, "The people have gathered against you, therefore fear them." But it increased them in faith. And they said, "God is sufficient for us, an excellent guardian. Is he?" So they returned with grace and favor from Allah, and no harm touched them. They followed the good pleasure of Allah, and Allah is of infinite bounty. Entire verses are quite clear. They talk about this march, not individuals. They do speak about martyrs, ascended to heaven, looking from above, asking Almighty God to steadfast those who are still alive. While those who are still alive increased their powers, and no longer they were frightened from the demon. Then Almighty God concluded the verses with the following verse. It is only the devil who would make men fear his partisans. Fear them not. Fear me if you are true believers. And with this, we clearly touch the fact that those youth who were mingling with the martyrs would get bravery, boldness, strength, and steadfastness when somebody was granted the martyrdom by Almighty God, because it was God who bestowed martyrdom upon him. So we may conclude here that Almighty God chooses the martyrs, not every individual deserves martyrdom, because there is a selection from God among those who have been honest and sincere in their faith. All these meanings contained in Islam and confirmed by the Holy Quran and the noble prophet's biography, in addition to this long Islamic history, down to 40 years of distinguished resistance in Lebanon and Palestine, achieved many victories that all Arab armies and the people failed to achieve. Therefore, we are very confident about the continuation of the march.
From what you just said, you have actually lived through the years of the occupation and then lived to see the liberation and the victories that came along because of the resistance, the old factions and blocks of resistance in Lebanon. And then later, after the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani, it was known that he was linked to the successes of the resistance in the region, and mainly and specifically in Lebanon. How do you think that this legacy will affect the current and maybe the future work of the Lebanese resistance to begin with?
As I mentioned earlier, this march is ongoing and does not rely on one specific person or even a group. What they said recently after the martyrdom of Fakhrizadeh, emphasizing the fact that the martyr had passed on this knowledge for so many individuals around him, while this project the Zionists are seeking its destruction is existing in the heads of hundreds of scientists who can't be killed collectively. Hence, the project is ongoing. this is to speak. This is the same understanding. What I do want to emphasize upon is that this theme is affiliated to a very big foundation. Connected to a distinguished leadership, many Muslims are at odds with it due to a specific juristic topic or a specific doctrinal topic. But due to the distinguished leadership founded by the late Imam Khomeini and the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, after him, it is unprecedented in the history that the leadership has been continuing the same principles despite the sanctions, blockade, killings, wars, accusations, and national and economic blockade. Palestine is at the top. The Quds Force must be distinguished financially, logistically, and from the leadership aspect. This clear destination shall not be subjected to any shake of this size. Though it was a great loss, on the contrary, the foundation is ongoing in a path it believes Quds would be its final destination, and no hurdles, barriers, or obstacles will delay this march. It is true that General Soleimani had the talent of leadership bestowed upon him by Almighty God, despite the fact that this is a believer or a non-believer, or this is on our side or against us. The leadership is a talented, granted by Almighty God, as He gives the color of the eyes or tallness of to human beings in order to be capable of leadership. Planning and vision is a grant from Almighty God. In a hadith of the Prophet, may God bless him and his family, he said, "People are like mines of gold and silver. Those who were excellent in Jahiliyyah, during the days of ignorance, are excellent in Islam when they have an understanding." That tradition means, should General Soleimani exist in any society, he will be the leader. But his efforts will be wasted in various wrong directions. But who designated this goal and convinced his people, I'm talking here about the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, who put this talent in its right place and chose him to represent him in Iranian domestic affairs or religious affairs. So here, his significance in this is that he put his talent in the right path, the right location, and within this frame here, we got to infer. For example, the well-known Egyptian writer Abbas Mahmoud al-Aqad, who wrote the book titled The Islamic Geniuses, in which he talked about the Prophet's genius at the beginning, then the four rightly guided caliphs in order, and at the end, the geniuses of some Muslim military commanders. In consideration, were these geniuses existed in one particular time? Of course not. If not for the framework set by the Quranic revelation and the Prophet of Islam through revelation, in addition to the divine call, those people's geniuses wouldn't have appeared. And therefore, the frame that Soleimani put himself in, and al-Muhandis, in addition to our heroes in Lebanon, such as Hajj Imad Ghaniya, and at the top of the march, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, may Almighty God bless him. This frame has the greatest credit in preparing the geniuses for those heroes. It is true those people were given distinguished talents by the Almighty God, but if this talent was put in another place, it was going to get lost or would result in big mistakes. Here, Soleimani's significance and the leadership significance that designated him in this integrated ongoing project, his absence shall not affect the resistance in Lebanon that he accompanied since its outset, and even the resistance in Palestine that would take much of his time. Were it not for the resistance and maintaining the resistance in Palestine, there wouldn't have been any confrontation with ISIS, the Takfiris, the Americans in Iraq, or any other place. All these achievements for paving the path of Palestine.
كل هذا من أجل تمهيد طريق فلسطين.
Your Eminence, You also dodged an assassination attempt back in 2013 at the hands of the same Takfiri terrorists that General Qasem Soleimani helped rid the region of West Asia from being the leader of the allied forces and armies from within the axis of resistance. How would you explain to the Western audience, maybe who seem to think that because of the Western propaganda, obviously, they seem to think that maybe Sunni Islam supports Daesh or maybe is part of Daesh movement in the region, while dropping facts like yourself as a great narrative against their propaganda?
It is so difficult to enter the Western mind with the existence of this amount of forged media. Just recently, Under Secretary of State David Hale, who said he paid $10 billion in Lebanon, maybe the region, I don't know, in order to tarnish the resistance's image. And prior to him, Jeffrey Hilford announced that we paid $500 million in a year and a half in Lebanon. It is not hidden from anyone the amount of funds being spent on the Western media. Let me put it this way. No doubt that the human being is weak. And as Almighty God stated in the Holy Quran, for a man was created weak. I shall give an example of myself. In a particular time at the beginning of the occupation, all the media that we trusted, including newspapers, were banned and never distributed in Sidon. I survived under the Israeli occupation for around 8 months, while the national newspapers stopped being distributed for about 2 months. I'm certain in these 2 months, some cases were mixed up with me, despite the fact that I was cultural, religious, and from resistance aspect immune. How about people that are exposed to media being paid and financed by huge amounts of money? Of course, there are talents in the media. We are following them and can't do without them. They are putting in a lot of effort in order to convince everybody that this project is a sectarian one, a Persian one, a royal project with a turban or a counter project. There is a portion of the society. I do not blame them when they approach me. They would say, once we meet you, we change our minds regarding what the media broadcast. The reason for that is the effort being done by the media outlets in order to tarnish everybody's image. I say, and by the way, I've said over and over again, for those whose minds were kidnapped by this silly liar and criminal media, the image of the resistance has been distorted with you. We do have 1,000 clues to clarify our stance and separate our sectarian disputes with our brothers in Iran and the resistance. These clues show us the truthfulness of this resistance, its clarity, bravery, and steadfastness. There is a very conspicuous clue that this resistance in Palestine and Lebanon are receiving the same support, training, missiles, and tunnels. What is forcing Iran or Hezbollah to be part of the resistance in Palestine where there is no Shia there? How many people in Palestine deserted their sects and became Shia? There is a real absurdity from one side. But from the other side, those who deviated from the governments were fought in their salaries, pensions, families, and their careers. Then they were sent to prison. We have an example here. Salman al-Awda, what was his crime? He saw a dream. He was trying to rent a house in Mecca. He saw the Prophet of Islam telling him that he intends to rent a house in Mecca. Al-Awda replied, there are no houses for rent in Mecca. But the Prophet answered him, saying, somebody did rent in Mecca. Al-Awda replied, O Prophet, this guy is one of their followers, which means you, Prophet of Islam, are not one of them. So due to this dream, Al-Awda was arrested and sent to prison. He was about to die. Anyway, he was sentenced to death, but the judgment hasn't been executed yet. When oppression and suppression reaches this level, by the way, Al-Awda was to some extent part of the Saudi regime's entourage, and many others are the same, okay? What shall I say about other scholars and clerics? Once upon a time, an important delegation from Lebanon went to Egypt in order to meet our beloved Sheikh of Al-Azhar, Ahmed Al-Tayyib, who delivered a fabulous speech. Then at the end of the meeting, he asked the delegation to convey his warm regards to Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. The next day, the delegation members noticed something different from Sheikh Al-Azhar's speech in some Egyptian newspapers. They said that the Sheikh attacked Shias and attempts to strengthen Persian influence and some other points. A member of the delegation got in touch with the director of Sheikh Al-Azhar's office, asking him about the lies that were published in the newspapers. The director replied, saying, "This is nothing to do with the Sheikh's office. It is up to the intelligence services to permit the publication of such news." This was a sample from Saudi Arabia and another from Egypt, and of course there are samples from all over the world, including Lebanon, but maybe in a different form. I do excuse some people, but the majority I don't excuse. I don't excuse them because they know well these are lies, have been inserted into heads, but regarding us, we thank God. We are continuing our path while telling those who don't join us. We are sticking to the Holy Quran while you are moving on the wrong interpretation. We are pro-Palestine, but you are Washington and Tel Aviv's allies. We are with the clear vision and you are following mist. Let them do whatever they want. A day shall come soon, God willing, this blurring will be removed from the eyes. Then everyone will see the clarity of the vision we have been following during these very long years. Then everyone will see the clarity of the vision we have been following during these long years.
Thank you very much, Director of the Union of Resistance, Sheikh Maher Hamoud. Thank you for your generosity and for your contribution to our special coverage for the first anniversary of the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani and his friend Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis from Iraq. Thank you for your kind contribution. Fi amanillah.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.